Hello, everybody.
Good day.
Hi.
Hey, Phil.
Hey.
Glad you could make it.
All right. First, let me express my gratitude to those of you who have participated on the discussion board. And somebody today, I think it was Keith, said, I'm not normally a discussion board kind of person. And believe this or not, either am I. And I'm going to tell you this. I hate those kind of things. I do. I'm not a Twitter guy. I'm just not. However, when I took what I do with you guys from face-to-face communication to doing it remote via teleconference, I really came to appreciate the connection value of the discussion board. So as you guys get to know each other better, I'm promising you it will become such an important part of what you get out of this program. Right now, it's still odd, and you see somebody post something, and, you know, Sandra was going through a tough time. So if you're not going through a tough time, you go, oh, I'm not going to post. And other people may say something like, hey, I'm really getting clear. Well, if you're not getting clear, you're going to go, oh, I'm not going to post. But you have to. And not because I want you to, because it engages you. So I would say I doubt that many people here are discussion board kind of people. But it's the connection. And I know that before the call, I would guess that you guys are having conversation, I would hope, because in previous Be Better groups, that's how everybody gets to know each other. But I'm really asking you, not for my benefit, for yours, to just force anything, you know, had a good day, just anything, so people know you're out there. And then you'll start to realize the value, the collective value of everybody in this group. Now, I want to start by asking, remember, you're going to hit star 6 to mute if you have any noise in the background, and then star 6 to unmute if you want to speak. But I would like somebody to tell me what their experience was with trying to speak to 5 people a day. Now, before you answer me, if your experience was, I didn't talk to 5, I spoke to 1, okay, I want to know that. If your experience was, I didn't talk to 5, I spoke to 0, but I have a very good reason, I'd like to hear that. If you say, I didn't speak to 5, I spoke to 20, I'd like to hear that. And if you say, this just isn't me, I'm not comfortable approaching people, I want to hear that. So there's no wrong answer here. So anybody, please just speak up and tell me, how'd you do with the concept of speaking to 5 people a day about what you do? And I'm approaching this knowing at first it's difficult. Who wants to go first?
Hey, Phil.
Yeah?
Hey, it's Dr. Grant. I actually had a fairly easy time only because I went to a health fair. So I think I talked to about 15, 20 people.
Okay. Now, well, that was one day, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And on the other days, did you make any effort? Because, yeah, here they're coming to you, right? Your focal point, and they're coming to you at a health fair.
Yeah, they actually weren't coming to me. We were kind of set up in their dining room. So most of them were there for lunch. So we had to actually go and talk to them. Hey, come on over.
Okay. So tell me, how'd that work out? How did it feel? Were you comfortable? Did you feel like you were intruding? Give me a sense of it.
It felt like you were intruding a little bit, but a lot of the time, like for the first couple, it was kind of weird. And then eventually it just became, I really don't care if they're going to punch me in the face. Just go talk to them.
Okay. Did anyone punch you in the face?
No, I'm 300 pounds. Nobody's going to punch me in the face.
Okay. Well, they could punch you in the face and run really fast.
Well, didn't try.
I'm glad that didn't happen. Did you actually get into any conversations that you thought, hey, that was worth the effort?
Yeah. I think I got 6 new patients out of it, so it was just, it was worth it. 5-10 minutes of your time for these people.
15 conversations, 6 new patients?
Yeah, I got a bunch of excuses. I don't have my schedule. I don't know if I can do that.
But that's, what, 40%, right? 40% of the people you spoke to became patients. Is that accurate?
Yeah. They schedule an appointment there.
Okay. So if that were to carry forward, if you were really to speak to 1,000 people, that would suggest that 400 would become patients, right? So you know that you're capable of it. Now, what you're talking about, a health fair, is a little different, and here's why. If I have a table set up in the back of a restaurant, and I'm trying to sell the puppies that my dog just had, And I walk up to a table, and I don't have anything in my hands, but I walk up to a table, and they've all seen me. They're not going to have interest in talking to me unless they want a puppy, because they feel like, oh, here comes the puppy guy, right? So when you're in a health fair, it's a little bit contrived because you're there specifically to attract people. And as you said, they were there for lunch. So in a sense, it's a little easier because you have a ready-made captive group. But in terms of being the real world, it's not the same. I'm suggesting this gets really powerful when you can approach somebody in the grocery store. Because there's a person who may need your help. They may or may not, but they may. And if you don't strike up a conversation with them, chances are they don't know you exist. And either they'll never get the help they need, or they may go somewhere else where they're not actually helped. So this is where I like to lead you guys to the point where you're just so comfortable in your own skin that you're okay striking up those conversations. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm telling you every single day of your life you have to go chase people. It's not that. This is an exercise. It will change your confidence, but it will also change your awareness of what is possible. So if you just stay with that number of 40%, because now you know that to be a real possibility. If you speak to 15 people, there's a very real possibility you will get 6 patients, right?
Yep.
It all of a sudden changes how daunting the thought may be of talking to 15 people. Because if one says no, you go, okay, one down, but I still have 14 more to talk to, and I know the 6 are in there. And the more you do it, the better it starts to feel, and no longer is it an effort, and I'm going to promise you this, you start to really appreciate it because you connect with people who needed your help. So thank you for sharing that. Thanks for being the first. Who wants to be second? Who can tell us how you did with that, whether it's fantastic or nothing at all?
Hey, Phil, this is Rick. I kind of incorporated a little bit, but it was kind of a different situation, so things were probably a little bit easier and like not getting out of my comfort zone because I just got back from vacation. And, you know, when you're on vacation, you're always kind of, you know, talking with people and striking up conversations. So it's kind of really easy to get into the mode. I mean, obviously it wasn't a situation where I was looking to get people into the office, but it was more just having a conversation about, you know, what I do and, you know, the aspects of my, profession. So it worked well, but like I said, I know it would be much more difficult in the environment in, you know, where I am and just, you know, out on the streets, you know, whether it's, you know, waiting for the train or something like that, just to strike up that conversation.
That's an interesting perspective. It's easier when you're on vacation. Why do you think that is?
You know, because that's it seems like everybody, when they're on vacation and at a resort, they're more open to discussions. Everybody's in a better mood, I guess, and, you know, because you can see it, like, you know, I work in Center City, Philadelphia, and, you know, a lot of times you can see people have those blinders on, they're looking down, they're, you know, not open to the world around them, and, you know, I guess when you're on vacation, saying hello to somebody and striking up a conversation doesn't feel intrusive, where sometimes I guess in the common daily life, you feel like, you know, you're intruding upon them, or they have their shields up and are trying to, you know, defend from anybody kind of talking to them or getting near them.
So when people are on vacation, do you think they appreciate conversation?
Yes.
When people are on vacation, do you think that they appreciate a conversation where they're asked about themselves and they get to share some things?
Yes.
So from that, is it fair to say that given the right set of circumstances, people are very comfortable sharing about themselves?
Correct.
Those people who you met on vacation, do they go back to their own real world?
Yep, absolutely.
And do you think once they get back to the real world, they no longer have that want to speak to people? See, this is what we do. This is how we set ourselves up. We make decisions, we make rules, and we believe them to be true. So a rule in your mind is when people are on vacation, they're easier to talk to. Who says? You know, here's another thing, and you guys will hear me, and I apologize for it and don't at the same time, but I'll make a lot of references to the health club because that's the environment I spent 20 years plus of my career in. But I would teach my staff this movement, and if you saw me, I'd show it to you, but it is the movement of pulling earphones out of your ears. I teach them that. So when somebody's on a treadmill with their earphones on, walk over to them and do that. Just, you know, make that movement, and they're going to take out their earphones at least for a moment. And at first, they are petrified. They are so afraid to do that. They think it's intrusive. They think it's rude. But once they do it, now here's the difference. You can't ask somebody in the health club to take out their headphones. They take them out and you go, hey, you interested in signing up for personal training? Because then they'll get mad. So it's not that. It's just, hey, how are you? My name's Phil. Have you been a member here for a while? And never, ever, ever does the person say, leave me alone. I'm listening to a great song and I don't want to miss it. Never. So what I've learned is people like to talk to other people and people like to talk about themselves. But that's my rule. I've learned that rule, and I want to share it with you. You won't believe me until you get out of your comfort zone. So the fact, Rick, that you were able to speak to all these people on vacation, what that says to me is Rick is able to strike up conversations and tell people what he does. I challenge you to challenge yourself to approach somebody waiting for a train. Try it. Just try it. Start with this. Hey, how are you? Just that. And see what happens. If anybody really gets mad, then you'll tell me on the next call. You go, wow, I really pissed this guy off. I said hello to him. But once you get past that, here's what you're going to find. You say hello and smile, they will say hello and smile back. That changes the rule a little bit. It changes the rule from nobody wants to talk to me to people like to say hello. And then from there, you start some common conversation. Maybe they're holding a magazine and you reference it. Maybe they have the same cell phone as you do or a different one. You go, how do you like that iPhone? Anything to get you in a conversation. And I think you're going to realize you don't have to be an extrovert. People feel a sense of connection. And why is this so important? Because on the last call, I said everybody's looking for marketing ideas, marketing things, marketing hooks, marketing secrets. They want to buy lists. And they're all kind of chasing the same thing when the fact is, the business, in terms of who will come into your office and connect with you, is all around you. You're walking by it every single day. You're walking in it every single day. So, Rick, I'm glad you had that experience, but now are you willing to take that challenge to step out of your comfort zone, to hear the voice in your head say, Rick, don't do it, and to do it anyway, and just smile and say hello, and then tell us what you learned?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Thank you. Let me get one more. One more person tell me, whether you did or didn't, I would just like to hear the experience or the effort or the lack of.
This is Joan Burrow.
I'm sorry, who is it?
Joan Burrow.
Joan. Okay, Joan. How'd it go for you?
And I found the only opportunity I had for this was in lines. So in line at Costco, in line
okay.
to get to check out, in line. And I didn't make the 5 a day, but every time I was in a line, I talked to at least one person.
Okay. And was it just for the sake of talking to them, or did you actually tell them what you do for a living?
Probably half the time I got to what I did for a living.
Okay.
Because some of it was time, making a connection. But the other thing that I might have different from y'all is that I live in a fairly small town, and so even making the connection without introducing myself, a lot of people already know me because I've been
okay.
in the same small town for 33 years. Right. So a lot. So some of those conversations went. You know, I really like what's in your cart, right? I should be a more careful shopper, right? And would go into health and would go into, well, you know, I'm a chiropractor and that's kind of what I do and then look at the stuff I buy. Oh, yeah, my sister goes to you. Or, oh, yeah, you know, my neighbor talked about you. Or my, you know, my cousin used to come to you or something, you know, some, you know, I got that probably a third of the time.
Okay, good. Good. Those were pleasurable, right? I mean, there was nothing wrong with that. That wasn't uncomfortable at all.
No, it wasn't.
Were any of them uncomfortable?
I think I probably got one or two grinches, you know, kind of grumpy people. But even that's not uncomfortable. It's just, you know, I'm sorry you're having a bad day. Right?
That's it.
Yeah.
And usually grumpy people are grumpy because they got something going on. Now, I'm not saying we could solve all their problems, but you might be able to solve some. So sometimes you can see that grumpy person as here's an invitation. And again, I know it's a change in mindset, but you know, it's, you know, I've seen people at times sitting with a certain posture, and I've just walked over, put my hand on their shoulder and said, "Are you okay?" But really, because I meant it, like, "Are you okay?" And more often than not, they start to pour their heart out. So I've learned that too, that that face that says, "Don't bother me," may also be screaming, "Nobody's willing to talk to me." So the more you do this, the more you start to learn it, and I'm promising it will give you a sense of freedom. Again, I don't want you to think this is the goal, is to just turn you into a walking conversation. But it's important that we change some barriers, some blocks, some self-imposed rules, so we start to realize our own potential. And what I want you to realize is people want to hear from you, they want to talk to you, and you can help most of them. So if you can help most of them and they're in front of you, why not at least open that door? So I appreciate you trying. Now, I'm going to ask you to stay with it. I do believe that most, if not all of you, will get to five a day, and it will soon become habit. It will feel good. It becomes at one point a game that you play with yourself. You know, I only spoke to four. I got one more to go. But then you start getting patients. Then you start getting referrals. Then you start finding some of the people you spoke to last week are contacting you. And you start to realize this is the best marketing in the world. That doesn't mean you won't do other marketing, but this is the one you can most rely upon because it's simply you sharing who you are with people who need you. Let's go to the ideal calendar. Did any of you attempt to tackle that? And I'll preface this by saying for most people at this point in the program, it's hard because the voice in your head says, you must do this, you must do that. You can't do it at this time because, and you have to realize, unintentionally, you created that voice. So it's going to annoy you when you try to do this, and it may lead you to say, I can't do this. So I'm curious, has anybody made the effort, and if so, what did you experience?
This is Sandy, and I've been trying. I've actually managed to get down the vacation times that I want.
Okay.
I'm sitting here looking at it as we speak. And
how detailed were you able to get in terms of work? Can you look at your work hours?
Well, I've narrowed it down to the hours that I want to work.
Okay, good. So when you look at that ideal calendar and you sort of project yourself into it, working those hours that you have on that calendar, that feels good to you, right?
Yeah.
When you look at the hours that you're not working, were you able to put in some things that compel you and excite you?
No.
Okay. So that's the next thing to do. Why were you not able to do that, do you believe?
I think because I'm focused so much on the business right now that it's just consuming everything I am.
So let's think about that. You're focusing on the business that's consuming you, right?
Right.
Remember on the first call I spoke about the RAS, the reticular activating system. What we focus on, we train our reticular activating system to focus on. So what you are saying is, business, eat me alive. That's what you're saying. By focusing on the business which is consuming you, and I do understand the reverse of it is, well, how could I not? It's consuming me. But by continuing to focus on things that way, you are inviting the business to continue to consume you until there's nothing left. So because you're in that state of mind, it is difficult for you to say, what would be something you'd love to do on a weekly basis that you don't do now, that you'd really love to?
Go hiking.
How often do you go hiking now?
I don't.
If you could go hiking once a week, would that make a change in the way you feel all around?
Yes, I do believe that.
Do you believe if you felt the way hiking makes you feel, you would be more productive just in your life?
Yes, I do believe that.
So then you believe that bringing things into your life that make you feel good can actually allow you to direct your business to serve you better because you'll be a better performer. So think of the reverse. The reverse is my business will consume me. That's not a good place to be. This is a choice.
Okay.
It's a hard choice to make because your brain is so wired to stay in that my business will consume me, my business will consume me. And you have to go, no, no, no. I'm going to take ownership of my time so I can direct my business so it serves me. So my business becomes the source of my prosperity. And this is why all of these exercises are so important. And, you know, I've said it many times and I'll say it again, because all of you will hear the voice that says, you can't, not possible, no way you can get hiking in there. Uh-uh, you can't talk to people when they're not on vacation. And you have to realize that's the voice that's led you to this place of frustration. I want you to uncover a different voice. It's in there. It's just waiting for you to access it. So these exercises of forcing yourself to do what the voice tells you you can't is what really starts to change the relationship between your RAS, reticular activating system, your EEM, emotional experiential memory, and your PFC, your prefrontal cortex. That is where you create possibility and where you create the future. So thank you for sharing that. Anybody else talk about their ideal calendar? Can I get one more? Even if you didn't do it, I'd just like to hear that you didn't do it.
So can I get clarity on one thing real quick? This
yeah.
is Sandy again.
Go ahead.
So you're saying when we make our calendars every day, put in specific times for when we're working, and then when we're not at work, put in specific things that we're going to do outside of work?
I'm saying create your ideal, yes. Create your ideal calendar. What do you want your life to be? On a weekly basis. So you're not going to make every day the same, but you're going to say hypothetically, I only want to work Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, for some of you, that might be horrible. You might want to work every day, but I'm hypothetically, I only want to work Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I'm going to devote the time from 7:30 a.m. until 7:30 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday to working. And some of that will be marketing, and some of that will be seeing patients, and some of that will be planning my talks, and you just map it out. And then you have 3 days. You go, okay, now I have these three open weekdays. What would I love to do? Not piano lessons. I always wanted to take piano lessons, so put that in. What else? Dating. I don't have enough time to date. I'd like to date, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, I'd like to have those open. Great, put that in. I really deserve a massage. I never go for it. I really think with all the exercise I try to get, I should get those massages. And you start to realize that you are able to create your future. Now, again, the voice in your head will resist it. You can't do that. You don't deserve that. You don't have time for that. But I'm not asking you to be reasonable. I'm asking you to create an ideal. I'm asking you to create what now may feel like a fantasy. So, yes, I want you to put in that ideal calendar whatever will make your week ideal. Spending time with friends, playing cards, swimming, whatever it is for you. Does that give you greater clarity, Sandy?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And really, I hate the silence here. I would love one more person just to tell us anything that you went through with the experience or the failure to even try of creating your ideal calendar. There's no reprimand here. This is just good for everybody to hear. So let me get one more person to just share some insight as to, you know, maybe it's, you know what, Phil, I didn't see the value of the exercise, or this doesn't work for me. You don't understand my calendar. I have to do these things. But so, you all had something, even if the something was I didn't take action. So I'm going to ask one more person to share.
Phil, this is Dr. Courtney. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Courtney?
I'm doing pretty good. So in doing the ideal calendar, both my brother and I both kind of bounced this back and forth. And, you know, it sort of became one of those things where, again, I definitely didn't give it the time it deserved, for sure. I'll be honest with you about that. You know, my wife is pregnant, and, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, life things that's kind of gotten in the way. But when we did sit down and talk about it, I found, like, a conflict in trying to design my perfect schedule versus, like, my perfect calendar. Because the calendar really ends up being like your life, and the schedule ends up being what you do in the office. So, you know, I'd go down one road where I'd end up kind of making, like, you know, what were my ideal office hours essentially versus what, like, my ideal calendar for my life would look like. And so that's kind of like, you know, once I got past the hurdle of, like, okay, this isn't have anything to do with my office hours, it's more like, what do I want my life to look like on paper? And so we've kind of got to that point now, and I'm still in process, still developing, but, I mean, that was definitely a mental hurdle I had to clear before I could really make any progress.
So in your mind, your schedule is a subset of your calendar.
Yeah, you could say it that way.
Your schedule has to fit into your calendar. You see them as two different things. My schedule is what I do in the office at work, and I got to worry about that. So if I try to create my ideal, maybe there's a conflict because my schedule dictates that I can't live my ideal. Is that it?
Something like that, yes.
Okay. So is it possible for you to change your schedule? In your mind, do you believe you can take ownership of your schedule?
Oh, 100%.
So you are either a victim of your schedule or you are the creator of it, right? There's no other option. You're a victim of it or you're the creator. Which would you prefer to be?
Creator. I don't ever want to be a victim of anything.
And that's exactly what I'm asking you to do. I'm asking you to create it. So all of these walls, all of these blocks that come up that say, well, I can't because my schedule and my calendar. Yeah, I'm asking you to create a sense of what will make you feel good. Now, a part of what will make you feel good has to be your business, right? Because this was intended to be fulfilling to you. You're intended to have profit from it. You're intended to find prosperity from it. But your business should not become who you are. So just the fact that you have that conflict means you've got to give yourself greater freedom. You have the ability to design your calendar and with that take complete ownership of your schedule. So you've got to get out of the stuck point of what things are now. And by the way, I'm not making anybody promise. I'm not saying that the ideal that you create, you will be able to live. I'm not promising that. I'm just saying you're going to get clear on what you want. And that's what we're trying to get to, because otherwise you're a victim of what you created for yourself. And not just Courtney, I mean all of us, because we build a business, we follow a path, we get clients, we get patients, we have income, we get to employees, we have a lease that we pay for equipment or furniture or a car, and now all of a sudden we're a slave to all of that, and what we fail to realize is we did it. So if we did it, we could do it all over again differently. And the fact that everyone has trouble with this at first shows how stuck we are. I want you to remember this when we get to month 4, because all of this is just going to become second nature. And you're going to have a hard time believing you were this stuck. So those things, it's almost like when you find somebody with a muscular imbalance. And their quadriceps are so much more developed and so much stronger than their hamstrings. You go, oh, today we're going to work on hamstrings. They don't want to. They want to work on the quads because they go, "That no, I like that." So you like doing what's easier for you, and you kind of don't like doing what's harder for you. And that's why most of you initially will shy away from the 5-a-day, the ideal calendar. But these are the things you need most if you want to take ownership of your life. And, again, I tell you this from experience. You will witness the change in each other, in yourselves, and I will witness it along with you. And this I know. So that's why it's important to realize your own blocks right now. You're doing these exercises are also the same blocks that keep you from getting where you want to get to in life. Any other thoughts, comments, questions about the 5-a-day or the online calendar? Knowing that moving forward, these assignments don't go away. I want you to, again, do better. That's all I'm asking you to do. Do better. Try to talk to some people. See what the outcome is. Once you get into conversation, see if you can talk about what you do for a living. If there's a need there, great. You'll talk a little further. If there's a request for a business card or your email newsletter or let me take your name and number, that much better. None of these are mandatory, but I want you to make the effort. And as far as the ideal calendar, ask yourself, do you love the way your life is now? And if the answer is no, or if the answer is I do, but I could love it more, then I'm asking you to create the fantasy right now. Take a calendar, and what would you like your life to be? And is it hard at first? Yes. And then it gets fun. And when it gets fun, it doesn't feel hard anymore. So with that, any thoughts, comments, questions about those two exercises, 5-a-day and the ideal calendar? Okay, I do hear some noise in the background. So somebody who's in a public place, if you're in a store, a gym, a busy office, if you could hit *6, that would be great.
Steve, this is Bob Phil, this is Bob Kenny. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Bob. How are you?
Something you said just a minute ago really shocked me, because I sat with this calendar and all I could think about was what I have to do for the business, what do I have to do for the business, and what do you do each night when you come down? You read something about health care. And when you said the business will consume you so that you don't have anything else, and I think that's a point that I have gotten to. I'm alone, and I just I don't that's the only thing I think about anymore is what am I going to do with the business and what book can I read and what other thing can I do to be a better doctor. And I think you're right. It's consumed me. I had a hard time filling out a calendar. Couldn't put anything down.
Right. All the more reason why you need to do it. The harder it is, the more you need it. You know, and again, I know it's a little bit of a paradox, but the harder it is, the more stuck it says you are in the calendar that you really don't want to live, but you've imposed upon yourself.
So what you're saying, you've got to put more things in the calendar, really, besides just going to the office.
Not for the sake of things, for the sake of you going, yes, I love that. Oh, but I would love to do that.
Okay.
It changes your emotion. When you change your emotion, you change your thoughts. When you change your thought, you change your emotion, you change your outcome. So that's what we're moving toward. So, yeah, you got to break out of that place where you're just locked into work, unless you're living every day going, what a great day, I got to read another health article, and you want to just celebrate that. You know, if that's your reality, I wouldn't want to change it. But it doesn't sound like it is. It sounds like you're living a pattern that you created, but really it's not your ideal. So, yeah, I'm saying whatever it is that you love to do, if you love to watch stupid, goofy Jim Carrey movies, you know, put that in. Anything. I can't tell you what things will apply to you because we all have different likes. Some people will want it that you stopped jogging. You used to jog every morning and you stopped because you can't. You have to have your coffee and get to the office. Well, put it in there. And part of your brain is going to go, well, how could I ever do that? I now have 730 patients. Forget about the how. I just want you to create it. I just want you to attach your PFC, your prefrontal cortex, which will find the possibility, but you've got to create it. So, yeah, Bob, you got to get out of that place. Not to neglect work,
yeah,
but to not be consumed by it unless it truly is the life that you love. And I'm going to guess if you're in this program, there are some things that you'd like to improve, right?
Absolutely, yes.
What is one thing you'd love to do? Just can you think of any one that you would love to do that you're not doing right now?
Boy, I have to struggle to think of something. I can't think of anything. I feel as if it's a beautiful world we live in, but I've never had a desire to travel. I guess maybe that would be something that I would put in there.
Where would you love to go?
I'd like to see Alaska. I'd like to see Hawaii. I'd like to see California. I'd like to see Washington, state of Washington, and British Columbia. I never realized
maybe
so many of those things would come out at one time.
Okay. Now, what about just within 50 miles of your home, what would you like to do? Those are all very good, though, and I would like you to put them in there, you know, whether it's once every 3 months, you go on a trip, you know, great. So maybe every Thursday night, you spend 30 minutes on the internet planning your next trip, you know, and now at least your RAS is going toward, I'm going to have fun, this is an adventure. What about without getting on an airplane, what would you love to do that you don't do now? It could be anything.
Just a short distance from where I live in northern Michigan, we have waterfalls that people go and sometimes they swim in the falls, sometimes they just walk around the falls, but I've never been there. They tell me it's beautiful, but I've never been there.
Okay, I would guess this is not the best time of year to go swim in the waterfall,
but
come the nice weather, I think that should absolutely be something you do. And you know what happens, Bob? It's not that the waterfall will change your life. You know, it's not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the fact that you're taking something in your head and then you get to the moment where it happens. And that's an amazing feeling that I thought it and it happened. And when you get clear on the thought, it seems to happen by itself. And you won't fully believe me until you experience it. And then you'll start telling other people and they won't get it. And that's just the way it goes. So those are the kind of things that I want you to explore because it's going to change the way your brain is directing you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Good. Good. Okay, good. I'm glad that you spoke up. Anyone else? Any thoughts on those two subjects or anything that came to mind as we were talking about them?
Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Justin.
Hey. What do you got?
I did miserably at the talking to five people thing.
Okay. Justin?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Is that your phone? We're getting some kind of weird interference?
Is it, am I clear now?
I don't know. You kind of go in and out, but go ahead. You said you failed miserably, right?
Yeah, I did. I didn't do good on that at all.
Okay. Did you know that it was in your best interest to talk to five people a day or not? Like, do you believe that or you think, yeah?
Oh, no. I definitely believe it. Like, I know that's a weak area, but, you know, basically, like, the only people that I talked to about what I did are, like, people that came into the office that were guests of other people, or I might have talked to somebody at the gym, but it's one of those things where I don't go to that many places, and I go through my day. I don't necessarily expect anybody to approach me, and it just doesn't occur to me to approach somebody else. It's just like so far outside of what I would normally do.
Where do you go for lunch?
I go home.
Can you change that?
I mean, I could, but, like, I don't really want to. Like, I guess I'm just so set in my routine. I go to the office, I go to the gym, I go home, I eat my lunch. I like to make my own food. I go back to the office, and then I go home. I mean, that's just what I do.
Okay. There are some people who will hear that and go, yeah, that's my perfect life. There are other people who will hear that and go, oh, the poor guy. So how does it feel to you? Is that the perfect life for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like that. That's not like all I ever do. You know, I play music and I hang out with people, and I do all kinds of other things. It's just the opportunity to talk to people about what I do in terms of, like, trying to make it happen with five people a day. It almost seems impossible.
Okay, almost seems impossible means it's slightly possible, right? Almost.
Yeah. There's
slightly possible, not likely, but slightly possible, right? There is a slim chance. Tell me about playing music. What do you play?
I play guitar and I sing.
And do you do that somewhere in front of people or just kind of for yourself? I do that too, by the way.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We gig, you know, probably four times a month.
In front of how many people?
It varies, but, you know, sometimes 50, sometimes several hundred.
Okay. Is there a restaurant or a store or a place that you can go get a lunch that would be in line with your nutrition? I know you like to make your own food. You like to go home for lunch. But in terms of just the nutritional value, is there a nearby restaurant that you could actually enjoy and have a decent meal?
Yes.
Which one?
It's a place called Five Loaves. It's like a local-owned restaurant, and they have
Five Loaves. Okay.
Farm-raised food and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. You go there every once in a while, or you hardly go there at all?
I hardly go there at all. Like, the only time I would do that would be, like, going out there with my family.
Okay. So here's a challenge, which you're certainly free to reject.
Okay.
Here's what I know. A part of would it help you to have more patients or clients? Would it help you?
Yeah.
Where do you anticipate that they will come from?
Like, where do they come from, or if I wanted more?
How will they find you? If you wanted more right now, where would they come from? How would they know you exist?
I could go do talks. I could set up a screening. And from time to time, I do, you know, I come across people, in public. A lot of people know us find us on Facebook, stuff like that.
Okay. So how many more patients, clients, would you want to come into your business in the next month? Is there just a number, or it's just not important, you're doing okay, and that's not even a factor?
I mean, we are doing okay, but, you know, if I had, like, a solid 10 above what we already do, that would be pretty great.
Mm-hmm. So let's just say, hypothetically, that 1 in 4 of the people you speak to will become a patient. Okay? We're just creating that as a maybe now, a almost possible, okay? Not necessarily possible, but it's almost possible. 1 in 4, so that's 25%. Now, you know that you need 10. If you spoke to 40 people in December, based on the number I gave you, you'd get 10, right?
Right.
When you break 40 down over the course of 30 days, or let's even stay with weekdays, and let's just be real conservative, let's say 20 days, that means if you spoke to 2 people a day that you wouldn't have spoken to otherwise, you would end up with net 10 more patients.
True.
And what I want you to get to, and it'll take you a while, but you'll get there, is the realization of how simple that is. the recognition that you are completely in control of your revenue. This is far from the only way you're going to get business. But when you realize the power you have that you're not utilizing, it blows you away. And if somebody said to you, whatever that dollar amount that those extra 10 people will bring you over the course of a year, if somebody said, I will give you that amount of money, all you have to do is talk to 2 people a day, you would do it, right? You'd find a way. So what I'm suggesting is you're playing your gigs. At your gigs, make it a point to tell 4 people what you do for a living and to see if there's a conversation that follows. You know, very often when you tell people, are you a chiropractor?
I am.
When you tell people you're a chiropractor, do they immediately think of back? Like if somebody's going to respond, they go, oh, I hurt my back or I had a car accident on my neck. Do they go there?
Typically, yeah. Or they'll say, I'm lucky I've never had to go to one because I've never had a back problem.
Okay, right. Do you do more than backs?
I do.
What do you do beyond the back? I'll say the front.
I do whole family wellness. So, I mean, I see people with everything, with anything.
Give me examples. Just give me some real-life examples.
Asthma, ear infections. I do nutrition to help people get off of medications.
What kind of medications?
Cholesterol, blood pressure,
thyroid,
pain meds.
Mm-hmm. Even anti-anxiety meds sometimes?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's what I'm telling you. The 2 people you speak to, either in the restaurant or in the place that you play or in the street or at the gas station, they don't know that chiropractors do that. They don't know.
Right.
So if you're doing a talk, if you have something set up and you have the spine with you, they're framing you. They have no idea how you can help them. This is where you start to appreciate what you're missing, is when you have those conversations. Because once you break through that place that you go, I can't, it's really hard, or I don't choose to, or I like to go home for lunch. Once you break through that and you're willing to just take the adventure of trying it, you're going to find that in conversation, somebody goes, you know, my kid has asthma. We've been to every single doctor. I've been on thyroid medication and blood sugar medication. I feel horrible. I have no energy. They wouldn't tell that to a chiropractor unless they were in a conversation with a chiropractor and they came to understand that that chiropractor does more than just back. There's no ad that can have the impact of that conversation. There's no social media that could have the impact of that conversation. Are those things valuable? Sure. But they're random. They're unpredictable. They're costly. What I'm asking you to do costs you nothing, and it is 100% predictable. So I don't know the 1 in 4 number for you until you start to do it. Until you start to do it. Once you start to do it, you'll find that number, and it really becomes mathematical. So I really, and I've said this before, I completely get it, guys. I'm not saying this should be easy. But I've also been there, and I've seen the other side, and I want you to go through the process. I want you to challenge the thought that says, I can't. This is the way my life goes. I just like to go home for lunch. Force it. It may be uncomfortable, but force yourself to go to that restaurant twice a week. And when you're there, be very aware. I'm here with a mission. I'm going to eat my farm-raised food, but I'm also going to talk to 2 people. I'm going to make it a point to talk to 2 people. What do I say? I don't know. Hey, what are you eating? That looks pretty good. Start there. Because the conversation, when it starts to take on a life, gives you an opportunity to tell them what you do for a living. So step one, open up the dialogue. Step two, find that opportunity to tell them what you do for a living. And by the way, if the conversation's over, it's over. You're not going to force it. And then step three is get them to tell you what need they may have. And that's where it becomes magic. So you got to start with step one. So would you be willing to do that, or would you consider doing that? Going to that restaurant twice next week and making it a point when you have a gig to talk to some people, not only about the music, but about what you do.
I do. I got a gig tomorrow. I'm on it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You bet.
Anyone else? Any thoughts at all? Come on, you guys are starting to warm up. Okay, so now, think of this statement. Love what you do, do what you love, and prosper. Love what you do, Do what you love and prosper. It's a nice thought. And I think when we're going through our advanced schooling, whatever field we're directed to, we believe that the schooling will lead us there. I happened to sit next to a medical student on a recent flight. Had a really good conversation with her. And I was impressed by the intelligence, by the open-mindedness, and also by the naivety, because she has not been in the real world yet. So it's really interesting and refreshing to sort of connect with that passion for where this is leading me. When I speak to people who have been in practice for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, or more, very often that passion is absent. So what we want to do is bring you back to that place, whether it's happened in your life before or whether you only thought it would. Love what you do, do what you love, and prosper. Now, sometimes people hear that and they go, do you mean love what I do all the time? Yeah, that would be good. Is it possible? I think so. Will everyone achieve it? There may be a few things you hate. Maybe you hate paying taxes. Can't make you love that. I can give you a different perspective on it. You know, sometimes you take a look and you go, I'm paying more in taxes than I used to earn in a year. So rather than being upset, you go, that's great. Look how much money I'm making. So there's always a perspective on something. But if we work toward that place where you love what you do what you love, and you prosper, that's a really good place for everybody to be. So that's the intention of this program, to take you there. And a part of that is earning the kind of money that you deserve. Who is to determine what you deserve? Well, initially, it's got to be you. It's got to be you. Because if you look at your market and you go, well, what will the market bear? Well, the average so-and-so earns X dollars an hour or a week or a year. Who says that's what you deserve? Maybe you're not doing as good a job as the average. Maybe you deserve less. Or maybe you're doing something so fantastic you deserve 10 times that. So it's got to start with your determination of what you deserve. And it's a difficult question if you've been locked into a paradigm. If you charge a set amount of money because it's what other people charge. And just as I'm asking you to create your calendar, I want you to learn to make the kind of money you deserve. So it becomes important that you determine what you deserve. You can determine annually what you deserve, weekly, doesn't matter. But it has to be a number. What do you really deserve to earn? Now, this will land you in one of two places. You might say, I deserve $30,000 and that's it because I don't really work that hard. I'm overpaid as it is. I really don't get people well. I don't deserve as much as I'm making. That's a very limiting perspective. But what that says is you've got to change what you do. You've got to change what you do because that's not going to make you feel fulfilled. The opposite is I deserve to be paid $500,000 a year, but I only earn $60,000. And then you weigh that out. Do I really deserve to earn? And if I do, why? And if the answer is yes, I deserve it, then we got to get you there if you're going to love what you do, do what you love, and prosper, because prosper means you're getting what you deserve. And there's a part that falls under your umbrella that doesn't fall under everybody's, and that is you have to do it. You have to make the money you deserve by making lives better in the process. So that complicates things a little bit. But when you get there, it feels really good. And I'll tell you why. Because when you love what you do and you do what you love and you prosper, when you're making the kind of money you deserve and you're doing it by having people say, thank you, you changed my life, it really becomes blissful. You never feel as if you're working. Guys, I told you, I don't love the discussion board. But you know what? I love this. And I look forward to the day that I meet you guys in person. I do. Because I've been there. And there's usually a hug, and then there's a story, and I look forward to that. I really love this. So for me right now, I'm talking to some new friends on the phone. This is not work to me. Is it a part of my livelihood? Yeah. But that's the way I try to structure my work, where I love what I do. I can do a seminar, I have 2,000 people in the audience, and I'll spend 90 minutes talking to 2,000 people, and nobody's more jacked about it than me. But the really good feeling comes when 6 months later I get emails from those people or they show up at another seminar and they go, let me tell you how that changed my life. So when you get to that place that you love what you do and you do what you love and you prosper, it no longer feels like the burden of work. So I want you to know that condition is real and can be real for you, but it isn't necessarily easy. It isn't easy any more than developing a healthy body is easy. But is it worth it? Yes, it is absolutely worth it. The work that you're going to go through now is different than the work you've ever done before, but it is so worth it. And remember what I told you. Mindset controls focus. Focus controls actions, and actions control outcome. Mindset controls focus. Focus controls actions, and actions control outcome. A part of what may limit you is you think you can only do what you've proven you can do. So, for example, if you were at one time a bench press, a person who did bench press, and you bench pressed 275, then if anybody asks you, is it possible for you, the person, to bench press 275 pounds, you'd say yes. If they say, can you bench press 350, if you're only relying on your internal reference, you're going to say no. But if they show you somebody your size, your stature, your lifestyle, your experience, who was only able to bench 275 but used this technique to get to 350, it changes your belief. So the same is true. If you've earned $150,000 in a year, are you capable of that? Sure. Your EEM allows that. Your emotional experiential memory has the reference. It goes, yes, I know I can earn $150,000 a year because I've done it. Can you earn $600,000 a year? If you're stuck in your own internal reference, the answer becomes no. I only know I can earn $150,000. But if you look at external references, if you go, here's another doctor, here's another trainer, here's another therapist, here's another practitioner who I'm better than. I'm actually better than them. I deliver more value. I deserve more reward. And they're earning $700,000. Suddenly, your perspective changes. And that's why it's important that you get out of your own head right now, that you start to look not to experts in other fields so you can emulate them, but you could look to the mindset that drove them forward. And when we look at great leaders, and I don't only mean famous ones, I mean there are some that I know personally who just are great leaders and huge successes by every definition of the word. I would say all of them started with a vision. Every single one of them started with a vision. They created the reality they're living today in their mind. All right, again, there's some noise in somebody's background. I can't tell what it is, but there's maybe somebody speaking into an intercom. If you can hit star 6. Good. So if you recognize that all great leaders begin with a vision, and you ask yourself honestly the question, am I capable of creating a compelling vision? If you rely only on your own reference, your own experience, you may say no. But if you recognize that you are capable of doing what any great leader did, because we're all the same. We're all different, but we're all the same. We have the same capacity to utilize mindset. So if they can create a vision, you can. Can it be their vision? Maybe, maybe not. But you got to create your own. So you've got to start to crystallize the vision. Now, in the first month, we're now moving into the second, I ask you a very general question, what do you want? We're going to move toward a concept called creative tension that will be the most powerful thing you ever learn. But in order to prepare for using creative tension, you've got to start to create a vision. So the ideal calendar is a piece of it. And that's why all of this is important. But I want you to realize within the next 30 days, you're going to have a paragraph or two that will articulate your vision. It's the simple answer to the question, what do you want? But it has to be constructed in a real-world way. It can't be, I want to live on Mars and have all of these Martian girlfriends or boyfriends. It can't be that. It has to be something in the real world. What I'm telling you to do is the real world is far greater than your own internal reference. So I want you to be open. I want you to get into that mode of creativity and start to create the vision. Once there is a vision, it's followed by a plan. The vision has to come first. So So here's where we shut ourselves down from the vision. I would love to own a home on the ocean in California, and I would also love to own a home in Colorado so I can have the best of both worlds, okay? So there's a vision. The thought within me may say, but you have trouble paying your mortgage. There's no way. Okay? And suddenly the vision gets squashed. So if I now focus on how can I make more money, how can I make more money, I'm letting go of the vision and I'm stuck in my money issue. This is why the vision has to come before the plan. You can't figure out the plan until you have the vision. So if I, in fact, wanted a house in California, a house in Colorado, I want to get crystal clear. I want to know what the house looks like. I want to know who's coming to live with me, who's coming to visit me. What season will I be in each home? What will I do when I'm there? What will the front door look like? What will the backyard look like? The more you can create that, the more you create new neural pathways that drive you to greater outcomes. So I want you to continue to refine that idea of calendar, but I want you to start to make it bigger. And I want you to stay along the thought process of what do I want, but I want you to create some tangibles. What is the vision? What is it that you will see? What is it that other people will see when they look at you? And I'm not talking about a facade or a false image. I'm talking about reality. Does it have to be all material things? Absolutely not. But can it be? Yeah, there's no shame in that. Because remember what I said, we're prospering by bettering the lives of others. So it's not selfish to want for things as long as it's not the essence of what you think makes you happy. So all great leaders start with a vision, develop a plan, which all of you are capable of, and we will do together. And then they go a step further. They have to know the plan will not work. This is really important. Because you create the vision and you go, I am going to build a business that generates $1 million a year. Good. Now we have the vision. We start to get a little more specific. I will do it by having X number of people come into my facility. I will have all of these different treatment modalities. I will have 3 satellite offices, and you start to get really clear on what the vision is. And now you set up a plan. And suddenly, a hurricane comes. Suddenly, it rains and washes things out. There are mudslides. The economy crashes. A competitor opens across the street. You have a family emergency that takes you away from the business. You have an employee who steals from you. Now, this is not doom and gloom. This is kind of the way life goes. So I'm not saying a horrible tragedy will befall you, but I'm telling you when you create the vision, it's idyllic. You go, oh, this is really good. Now you create the plan, but you haven't invited real life into that plan yet. So when you start to execute the plan, something will screw it up. And I want you to realize that's part of the process because no plan works perfectly. It never does. Just hold on to the vision. You can't question the vision. The vision comes first. Then the plan. But the third thing that great leaders rely upon is a willingness to chart the course, evaluate progress, and then rechart the course relentlessly. So when something happens, it knocks you off course. That doesn't mean, woe is me, I'm screwed. That doesn't mean I need a new vision. That means, okay, I got knocked over here. I just have to rechart the course. And creative tension becomes the tool that will make sure you stay very connected to the vision. Last time I talked about the questions we ask ourselves, and I said a lot of us tend to say, what else can I do? Things aren't working, so what is the thing I can add? And a part of what really good leaders do is they ask themselves really good questions. And in that, they uncover powerful answers. So as an example, how can you earn more doing what you love? If the goal is to do what you love, love what you do, and prosper, it's a good question. You don't need an immediate answer, but to get your brain to think along those lines accesses that prefrontal cortex. How can you earn more doing what you love? And there is a key element that takes you from setting a goal to a goal being achieved. I don't love the word goal. You won't hear me use that a whole lot. I'm going to give you some different terminologies as we go forward. I'll use the word outcome a lot. But here's why I don't love the word goal. Ronda Rousey went into her last fight with a goal. Holly Holm went into that same fight with a goal. One of them had to fail. Every boxing match, every football game, the Washington Redskins went into their last game with a goal. The New York Giants went into that same game with a goal. It is not possible that everybody will achieve their goal. So that's why I don't love the idea of goal setting, because a goal sounds like something you might miss, and I don't want to create that in my mindset. I like the idea of a vision. I like crystallizing a vision. I like the idea of an outcome. It's simply a reality that hasn't happened yet. Because it says to me in my mind, this is a certainty. So for now, if I use the term goal, know that I'm using it because I haven't given you those terminologies yet. But we are going to grow past it. So a key element that helps you go from the point of setting a goal to a goal being achieved is responsibility. All right, now you might have expected something great there, and I just said responsibility. You go, big deal. Responsibility, I've heard that since I'm a kid. Need to be more responsible. But let's really think about what responsibility means. You might have heard this before, but it really will help you understand the word at a different level. If you go to the doctor, and the doctor gives you medication, and then says, it appears as if you're having a reaction to the medication, is that good or bad? Positive or negative? Doctor goes, looks like the medication is bringing on a serious reaction. Would that be good or bad?
Depends on the reaction.
Well, how would you? What would you associate with that word? He's reacting to it. What would your gut say? Would you go, oh, great, he's reacting to it? Or would you go, oh, really, what's the reaction?
I mean,
I'd say bad.
What if I say he's responding to the medication?
Good,
right? So reaction can go either way, but more likely it's something unwarranted. There was a reaction. Something happened. It almost means something happened that we didn't expect. We acted by giving this person the medication, but there was a reaction. Something else happened. Respond means, hey, it's working. So when we think of the word responsibility, if we hyphenate it, make it responsibility, it really means the ability to respond. So when we talk about going from the point of setting a goal to the point of achieving it, if you remember what I said, the plan never works the way it's supposed to. It doesn't mean don't set the plan. You need the plan. You just have to be responsible enough to know that when that plan goes awry, you must respond. You've got to take a look at it and go, what happened? Where did it send me? And what is the best thing for me to do right now? Responsibility. If you walk away from this call with those simple gifts, that you're going to start to crystallize a vision, that the vision must precede the plan. You're not going to worry about the how right now. Anytime a voice shows up that says you can't because, you've got to squash it. It's your enemy right now. The vision is unobstructed by the need to create a plan. Get clear on the vision. Only then do we start to create the plan. Once you have that plan, you have to have a willingness to evaluate progress and rechart the course. You've got to be response able. And this will lead you to that place, one step at a time, but ultimately exponential leaps, where you love what you do what you love, and you prosper. So as I'm asking you this week to start to fill in the vision, to start to really answer that question, what do you want, to start to really crystallize that ideal calendar, part of you will resist it. So here's what I'm going to tell you. As this feels uncomfortable, as your mind wants to say, don't do this now, do it tomorrow, I'm asking you to force it. because two calls from now, you will embrace it, because that's when we're going to start to act and move. Right now, we've got to figure out what everybody's moving towards. And until we have that, this would be a mediocre program at best. I mean, I've got gems that I can share with you, but I want you to own them because you know where they're taking you, and I can't decide that. You have to decide. So right now, what you've got to do is narrow in on the vision. Now, I want to ask, who has an employee or two? Somebody just answer. Tell me your name. I'd like to talk to somebody who has employees. Anybody?
I have one.
You have one. Was there a time you were in business with zero, or did you go right to one?
I've always had the one. I bought an existing business, so that probably.
Okay, and did you inherited that employee?
Yes.
How valuable is that employee on a scale of 1 through 10? I'm not asking you to assess them personally. I'm just saying, how important are they? Meaning, 1, if they left tomorrow, it wouldn't affect your life very much. 10, if they left tomorrow, it would be a major crisis and you'd have a hard time replacing them.
4 or 5.
Are you comfortable with that, knowing that you might run that risk?
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
It's probably a situation I need to evaluate a little further, to either let her go or to come up with a more valuable employee, one that brings more.
And I don't want you to make any change yet. I'm giving you just food for thought right now, okay? Is there the possibility that this employee will become your apprentice? You want me to clarify that, or do you know what I mean?
Please clarify. I think I know what you mean.
An employee is somebody really who will do what they're asked to do because they're paid to do it. An apprentice is somebody who really becomes a vital piece of what you do, to the point that they can fill in for you when you're not there, to the point that they may be a part of your legacy. They're somebody that you're developing, that they're serving you and you're also serving them. Can this person be that?
Absolutely not.
So whether or not you have that person working for you now, and I'm going to guess most of you don't, some of you might, I want you to, as one further directive, start to think about what are the 10 things you would need to teach your apprentice if that person were to show up in your life tomorrow. Before you could feel comfortable that you truly had an apprentice, what are the 10 things you'd need to teach them? And we're going to utilize that heavily on the next call. So that exercise shouldn't be hard. But all of this is leading you to a place where you create a future that is compelling, exciting, and achievable. And this becomes a piece. If you were going to teach somebody to truly be your apprentice, what are 10 things they'd have to learn? Now, if you have that employee, I want you to specifically think of that employee. What are the 10 things I need to teach her to really make her my apprentice or him? If you don't yet have that employee, blank slate. If you were to hire that person, what are the 10 things they'd really need to learn from you? Not just hear from you, but learn from you. Can anybody come up with one that just comes to mind as I say that? What is one thing that if you had an employee and they were simply an employee and you wanted to bring them to the level of apprentice, they'd have to learn? Can anybody? Let's say that you had an opportunity to go on the greatest vacation of your life for 1 year. The only prerequisite was you had to get somebody to operate in your shoes while you were gone. What would you personally need to teach that person? I'm asking for one thing. This shouldn't be a struggle. Give me one thing you have to teach them.
Well, Phil, this is Rick, and I'm just kind of clarifying this because the way I see it, and when I started my practice, I only started with one employee. Now, not including massage therapists, I have 5 employees. But, you know, what it basically is I remember starting it. I was able to do everything. you know, billing, scheduling, insurance verifications, the whole nine yards from one end to the other. As it grew and as the practice grew, yeah, and then I brought people in to specialize in those certain areas. But
as you
the ironic thing is now, one of the tough things for me to learn was the ability to let go. Like, you know, because everything's high-tech now with electronic billing and all, I have a billing person, and she's phenomenal at it. If she left tomorrow, I'd be screwed because I have no idea about, you know, I use ChiroTouch and how she does the billing and our clearinghouse and all that sort of stuff. So it, in a weird way, it's like, and it's tough for me to accept this, but, you know, I have to have those people because before it was like, you know, I felt, hey, anybody can leave. I can just step in. It'll be a hassle and I can do it, but not now. You know, I have an office manager who does, you know, all the payroll, all the billing. So when you're asking that question about, like, for me to sit there and say, what would I need to take a year off? If all those other people were in place, I wouldn't need any no billing because that's already done. I would just need somebody to do what I do specific. So am I clear on kind of just kind of clarify what you're asking for exactly?
Yeah. I'm saying, okay, so your office now has a billing system set up that's working, right? Needs to be managed, but you don't need to understand the details, correct? You need to look at reports. You need to understand outcomes. You need to know when there's a billing issue. But you don't need to know the mechanics of how it works because you hired somebody for that, right?
Right, yes.
Okay, so now that's a given, and we can list all those givens. But I'm saying if you were to take somebody, whether it's an existing employee or somebody new, and you were to say, you are going to be me for the next year. Here are the 10 lessons I need to share with you. Billing wouldn't be one of them. But what would be the things you'd have to teach them to operate as you?
I mean, the first statement comes to mind is how to adjust and how to be a functional medicine practitioner.
Those are really big, so let's break it down. Let's start with the functional medicine practitioner. Let's break it down. Within that functional medicine practitioner, what is one thing they'd have to learn, one lesson they'd have to learn?
I mean, I can go
and by the way, if anybody wants to jump in and help him, feel free. I mean, I want you guys to start to think differently, and that's why a lot of this initially seems, you know, a little different than you ever asked to do before. But it's really opening up a different way of thinking. What's that?
I would say communication.
Okay.
Patient communication.
Let's be a little more specific. Communication goes beyond words, right? So it's not scripts. So what would you have to teach them within the realm of communication?
How to take a wonderful history.
No.
Okay.
Basically, being able to describe to them what you do.
There you go.
To the patient, what they can expect.
They'd have to know what you do and why you do what you do.
Okay, good. Is there anything more specific that you can tap into that they wouldn't know unless they were taught?
Ordering labs, interpreting labs.
Okay. Let's stay on the communication issue for a minute. Anything specific that you – go ahead.
Well, I'd have to say from the communication aspect, like I run a day one and a day two that they come in, so I need to teach this person how to both run the day one and the day two, how to communicate to the people, you know, basically how to find out what their want and need is and then to be able to, you know, let them know how I can fulfill that.
Good. How do we find out what their want and need is? What is that process? What would the lesson there be?
I would see that as being a teaching process of, you know, first showing them what I do and how I do it and gradually, you know, watching them do. So it's, you know, teach by show, teach by, you know, example.
But what is it that you'd want to teach me? If I'm going to be your apprentice and you want to teach me how to get the want and the need, what will I have to learn? Is it simply words? Is it mannerisms? Is it sitting people in a particular office? What are the things specifically I'd have to learn to act as you?
It would be first off knowing that every person's an individual and you got to basically read the individual. You know,
okay, ding. There's the first. Hold on. That's the first one we came up with. You would have to teach people that everyone is an individual, and you would have to learn how to find subtleties that help you identify specifically who you're talking to, right?
Correct.
Is that an 8 for you right now? Is that automatic? Like, you don't think, oh, now I'm going to do this. I'm going to look at the individual. You just do it, right?
Correct.
This is a part of separating who you are from what you do. Let's get clear on the specifics of what you do so we can separate them from your personal life. And you'll see how powerful that is when we get there. So in order to go through this process, I'm asking you to come up with a list of 10 things like that that you would have to teach somebody if they were to act as you. Many of these things will be things you do innately that until you think about it, you might not even realize you had to teach people. You know, you could say, sit down with the patient, find out what they're here for. That's not a good enough lesson. You've got to teach your apprentice to speak to this individual, to read certain cues that you would teach them to identify what is the uniqueness of the person we're talking to here and what is the need, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's the final exercise that I'm going to ask you to do, and, of course, you will receive the notes by tomorrow.
Okay.
I want you to continue to talk to 5 people a day. I want you to work on that ideal calendar. I want you to start to work on crystallizing that vision. I don't want you to get crystal clear, but I want you to start to work on it. And I want you to just list 10 things that you would have to teach your apprentice. I want to finish today's call with an introduction to a persuasive system that gets anyone to say yes. Does that sound pretty powerful?
Yes.
Most altruistic health practitioners hate the idea of closing, hate the idea of selling, really enjoy, at least initially, doing what they do, but hate the idea of having to sit down with somebody who we consider a prospect and turn them into an actual source of revenue. We hate it. I'm going to show you how to love it. I'm going to show you how to take somebody from the point of that initial conversation in the checkout line, the deli counter, the gas station, when you first strike up that conversation, to getting them to say, yes, I need you. So I'm going to give you the very basic framework of it now. And next month, we're going to delve into it really deeply, and you're going to really understand how to influence anybody in ways you never thought possible. So if you have a pen in front of you or your computer, I want you to write down this acronym. And if you're writing one letter under the one before it, so N at the top of the page, which is the first letter of a word, N is the first letter, N like Nancy. Second letter is A. Third letter is V. Next letter is A. And then Q, A. So if you wrote these down, you'd write them as you would on a down crossword puzzle. The N is at the top, under it is the A, under it is the V, under it is the A, under it is the Q, under it is the A, and it spells out Navaka. This is a 6-step formula for getting somebody not only to say yes, but to love the fact that they just connected with you, to love the fact that they just became a committed customer. We're not going to go in detail today, but I'm introducing it to you. So the N stands for need. It's a word Rick used, need. All of us understand it. We need to find the need. But when we really look at what need means, I want you to put in parentheses next to it, P-A-I-N. That's not an acronym. It's a word. More often than not, the actual need is to get out of pain. Is it a physical pain? Sometimes, but more often than not, it's an emotional pain. And you cannot go any further in the influence process until you understand the true need, which really means the true pain. So if you go, hey, what do you need? And they go, I want to feel better. You haven't learned anything. If you go, hey, why are you here? And they go, I'd like to be in better shape. You haven't learned anything. It's not until you uncover the pain that you've actually achieved that first step. When you're trying to find the need, you will speak 5% of the time, if that. The second step, ammunition. So the A under the N stands for ammunition. What does ammunition mean? You're not going to shoot anybody. You're not going to use weapons, at least not tangible ones. But having gone through conventional selling and having hated every minute of it, I was taught, and some of you who've been through sales training in any field have been taught, to overcome objections. So you say, here's our product, here's our price, would you like to buy it? And they go, no, I have to think about it. Okay, so there's an objection. We just hit an objection. So they would train you how to overcome that objection. So you go, well, how long have you been thinking about it? Has thinking about it brought you any closer to achieving the outcome you want? Let's get you started today. It's obnoxious. It's rude. It's arrogant. I hate it. Sometimes they'll go, I need to check with my wife. You need to check with your wife. Isn't it your health we're talking about? Do you allow your wife to make all the financial decisions? Horrible. I would never do that comfortably. But I do understand that that's how salespeople often get to the word yes. What I've learned is the person sitting across the table from me or next to me can overcome every single one of their own objections because they wouldn't be talking to me if they didn't have interest. So when they're sitting talking to me going, yeah, I really need to feel better. Yeah, I was told I should get my amalgams out, but I really haven't done it yet. Yeah, I do need to change my diet, but it's the holidays. When they're giving me that, here's what I know. There's a pain, so I'm going to get to that pain. I also know that the force in their head that is prompting them to tell me this is the same force that will shut down all of their objections if I allow it. Not me shutting down their objections, they shut down their objections. The problem is I don't know what's in their head right now. So the ammunition phase is me extracting, getting them to tell me what's in their head. What have you tried in the past? What has that done for you? How did that make you feel? I'm asking them questions because I'm interested. And in that, they're telling me ultimately all the reasons why they must do this. And that completely erases the need for me to ever become adversarial, as in conventional selling. I'm never trying to talk them into anything. Now, by the way, this influence technique, once you master Navaka, it's not only about getting new patients or not only about getting new clients. It's about persuading anybody. But it only works if you have the person's best interest in mind. So it's not trickery. It won't work if you have a scam. It only works if you're really willing to listen and you have the ability to get this person out of pain or reduce their pain. So need ammunition. The next step is no less or no more important than the others, but vitally important, vehicle. The V stands for vehicle. When they share the pain, I want you to envision that as a dot on a map. And they are right there. So there's a map, there's a dot. That's where they are. Then they're going to tell you where they'd like to be. So I want you to picture that as a dot far away. So now they have to travel from dot one to dot two. If they believe that you are the vehicle that will get them there, they will commit to whatever your program offer is. This is really important. If they believe that you are the vehicle to get them from point A to point B, they will commit. I know many of you think money is the issue. If they believe that you are truly the vehicle, money is never the issue. Well, Phil, you don't understand. I live in a part of the country where people are concerned about money. I'm telling you this. Money is never the issue if they really have a pain and they believe you're the vehicle to get them out of pain. Now, does that mean you could charge everybody $500,000? Of course not, because you're going to charge what you deserve. And that's why everything I've asked you to do is a prerequisite for utilizing this. But the vehicle phase is your turn to talk. Need and ammunition, you're gathering information, you're fishing. But now, once you've got the need and you've got the ammunition, now using what you've learned, you present, whether it's one-on-one or to a group. You will convince them that you are the vehicle to get them from point A to point B. If you've done that well, they haven't yet made a decision, but they're intrigued, they're compelled, they're interested, they want it. But they haven't made a decision, because decision means they've cut off any other possibility. So need, ammunition, vehicle. The next step is alternatives. While I said they are all equally important, this is the most powerful. The alternatives phase asks them to think. You ask them to close their eyes. At first, you might think this is awkward until you do it once or twice, and you'll come to love it. All of the Platinum Doctors in Papa's group have learned this technique. They all use it, and every single one of them is just awed by it at first. So the alternative phase, now that you've gotten the need, you've understood the pain, you've learned all the things you needed to learn to squash their potential objections, and you've explained to them all of the things they need to know to believe that you're the vehicle to get them to where they want to get to, you're going to close their eyes and send them into two alternative futures, one if they connect with you and one if they don't. There's a very special technique we use to do that. But for now, I want you to understand we're going to guide them mentally to two outcomes. One outcome will be if they do not make the decision to change with you. The other outcome will be if they do. And they're going to literally experience both outcomes, sitting right there in that chair with their eyes closed. You're going to see it in their physiology. Some of them will cry. Some of them, their bottom lip will tremor. Some of them, they won't actually sob, but a tear will come out of their eye. And it's going to be hard for you at first until you realize they're looking at the potential future. They're not there. You didn't bring them there. You're just getting them to see, feel, hear, and experience what life is going to be like if they don't change. And in that moment, when you show them the alternative, they make the decision. There's no closing. There's no hard sell. There's no pressure. There's no overcoming objections. And it works. If that's where the decision is made, why are there two more steps? Well, the next step is qualify. There are times you don't want to take somebody on. Why? Well, maybe they won't be responsible. Maybe they expect miracles. Maybe they think you're going to give them a supplement that's going to make them well. Maybe they think that you have some magic. But there are times that you're going to say, this one is not right for me. So qualify means at this point, after they've decided they want to connect with you, you're going to just qualify, is there any red flag here that says maybe we shouldn't go forward? And the last A stands for advisor. An advisor means if they have not decided to go the direction you hoped they would, you're not going to pressure them, you're not going to sell them, you're not going to push them. You're simply going to remain in the role of an advisor, and they will perceive you as somebody on their side of the table with their best interest in mind. That's simply laying the groundwork for things yet to come. Any thoughts, comments, questions? I know I hear somebody here is already becoming a baby. They've reverted back to their childhood, which is just incredible. But whoever that is, if you could hit star six, we love hearing that delightful sound. But I want to make sure whoever wants to share a final thought can speak and be heard. So any final thought, comment, question? I've shared quite a bit with you today. I've left you with four directives. Notes will follow. Most of all, I hope I've gotten you to think. I hope I've gotten you to challenge that voice in your head that says, I can't do this. Maybe other people can, but I'm speaking to you. Absolutely, this program will bring you the change you want. This is the hardest part, and you've got to force it. It's the muscle you haven't worked enough yet. And when you start to work it, it serves you. So let me get one or two, just a final thought, comment, question about anything. That's as wide open as I can make it.
This is Sandy.
Okay, we got two. We got Sandy, and who else started to speak?
Bob.
Bob, okay. Sandy first, Bob second, and then I'm going to take a third one. So whoever's getting ready to be third, be on deck. Sandy?
So I have a question because I absolutely suck apparently at closing. How I managed to get the one recently, I'll never know because I've had more turn me down than actually sign up. So when we incorporate this, if we suck at it all the way around, is this going to at least get us one step closer?
No.
Or
is it going to stop you from sucking? You'll never suck again.
Can I hold you to that?
Yes, you can hold me to that. Assuming you do what I ask you. I mean, that's the important qualifier here. You know, I can't magically through the phone stop anybody from sucking. But if you're willing to follow the technique that I share with you, you will not suck. Yes, and you can hold me to that. So, good question. Hold me to that answer. Okay, Bob?
Well, I just wanted to say the sun is getting brighter all the time.
Good. And I'm really anxious to hear about your vacation. All right?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I get one more? Just one more. Any thought at all?
Hey, Phil, it's Rick. Yeah, you know, it's funny when I look through this whole sequence that you just kind of laid out here. A lot of this stuff, like, I've been taught and have been utilizing, but kind of you're putting things into a different perspective, which I really appreciate and I'm excited about, because I could see where some of these things I was kind of not doing correctly or trying to force certain situations. And, you know, I guess one of the most important things, too, that I got to try to keep in mind is that, you know, I need to fit this to who I am and my personality. A previous group that I was involved with, sometimes I felt that, you know, they were trying to push me into their model, and, you know, sometimes some things that they wanted me to do.
Yeah, Rick, this is a framework. What I've shared with you is not enough to act on. It's a framework. But you cannot do it without bringing you into it. It is not possible. This is 100% about you being you in a persuasive way, not in a salesy way, in a persuasive way that's going to lead them to say yes. It is a completely different paradigm than anything you've learned before. There may be some similarities, but when you put the whole thing together, I promise you, this will not feel anything like selling, and it will be 100% authentic to you.
Yeah, and I can see the difference, because when you just talked about ammunition, and, you know, one of the things that they talked a lot about was just, you know, overcoming their objections, and I was always uncomfortable with that, but how you kind of interpreted that makes me feel, you know, like, yeah, this can work more to my model. So I appreciate it.
You know what it's like? You know, I remember, I don't know if you ever watched The Flintstones, but it was a great show.
Oh, yeah.
And every once in a while, you know, Fred would have to make a decision. He was going to take off work and dress like a woman to get in free to the baseball game because it was Ladies' Day. And he didn't know. He didn't know if he should do it. And I think it's based on a true story. And he's trying to decide, you know, should I go to the game? I'd love to go to the game, and it's not going to cost me anything. And, you know, all I have to do is dress like a woman. But poor Mr. Slade, I'm going to have to lie to him, and he's relying on me. And the little angel and the little devil pop up, one on each shoulder, right? And the devil's going, come on, Fred, you deserve it. It's time. You're a slave to that job. Go enjoy yourself at the baseball game. And then the little angel goes, but Wilma will be so disappointed if she ever finds out. And the devil goes, but Wilma will never find out. And they're arguing back and forth. That's what people have going on in their head when they're sitting in front of you. You just don't see the angel and the devil. So the ammunition part is very simply finding out, what is that angel saying? So the devil has no ammunition left. We get all the stuff that the angel's saying before they're guarded. There is no objection. We don't even open the door for the objection. So they shut themselves down by just amplifying that angel voice and shutting down the other one. So, yeah, it is totally different than conventional overcoming objections. You never become the adversary. Never, ever, 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 ever. I'll throw in one more. Ever.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Hey, I appreciate it. I ask for it going forward, more participation on the boards, on the calls. You know, I do know some of it feels awkward. You don't know all these people yet, but you'll see those who participate the most get the most out of it. And also, when somebody posts something, you know, if you want to just post an acknowledgement that you read it, that you might have felt the same way, that you understand, that you care, that you're empathetic, or that you don't give a shit, you know, anything at all. But it's just good for people to start to know who each other are, because as we go forward, you're going to ultimately coach each other. And I also finally want you to understand that all the exercises I'm giving you stack upon themselves. So in weeks to come, months to come, all of this will make sense. You go, I see why he asked me to do this. I see what I got out of the exercise of trying to talk to 5 people a day. I understand why it was so hard to create my ideal calendar. I see why he couldn't give us that whole Navaka technique until we understood some things. I see why he wanted me to think about my apprentice. So I promise there is a method to the madness, there's a strategy here, but it's living. So the more you participate, the better it gets, and the more you get out of it. So until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.